Needham? I hardly know him. Hal Needham is next on Fanichek. Here we are, episode 4 of Fanichek.
Excited to be here.
I'm glad to have you here. So what is your name going to be today?
I thought long and hard about this, and no one's going to get it, but I'm going to go with Turtle. And if you know, I'll give you bonus points if you know what movie that's from.
Turtle.
I'll give you one clue. It's from 1984.
Turtle. It's right there. I think I know it. Turtle. I don't. I can't come up with
it. It's Daryl, if you know that movie. D-A-R-Y-L.
But it's, it stands for something, right?
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah, like a human robot, something or other. But the kid in there, Daryl's best friend was named Turtle. And in 84, when me and my friend saw it, I looked just like that kid. So, I thought I'd whip it out for all time's sake.
Does that movie mean anything to you, or just you look like
just a great movie? Yeah, it's one of the first movies I actually remember. I was, I'm 79 kid, so 84, I'm 5 years old, 6 years old, and I remember seeing that in the theaters and being like, first one that actually kind of made an impression.
Right. Yeah. I can place the box. I worked at a video store for a lot of years in high school, and I can place the box. Yeah.
It's a great movie. At the end, he steals an army plane or a navy plane and fly supersonic across the globe and all. Yeah, it's wild.
Right on.
Really, really great
film. I got to check it out. Yeah. Turtle. I actually briefly lived with a guy named Turtle. That was his nickname.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So I was in the military. Okay. And I got out of boot camp. And I ended up traveling somewhere else. And I was in a barracks room with four of the roommates. And one of them, I met him once. Never saw him again. And I guess he went AWOL. So he left all this stuff, including a wedding ring. So he had an empty locker. It wasn't empty. He had all his stuff in his locker, but it was unlocked. So after a while, I'm not seeing him. We kind of opened up and kind of figured what's going on there. And his wedding ring was right there. I don't ever know what happened to him, but his name was Turtle.
And for the younger folk, you can also always go with Turtle from Entourage. So
that's what I was thinking of. Yeah. That's where I had
not
a Turtle.
Not from 84, but right. Turtle. Now I kind of look like that Turtle. So. Got a little fatter.
That's a great show, Entourage.
Yeah, it is, for sure.
All right, so this is Fanichek. So Turtle, this is the podcast where I talk incessantly at people about stuff that probably bores the hell out of them. Hopefully I find some common ground with you and you can jump in whenever you want. But today we are talking about a gentleman named Hal Needham. Are you familiar with Hal Needham?
I recognize the name, I think, but I guarantee it's going to be one of those. Once you tell me more about him, I'm going to connect some dots.
It's pretty obscure, but here's Hal Needham. So, in short, the character Cliff Booth, played by Brad Pitt in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, he's based on several different people. One of the people he's based on is a stuntman named Hal Needham. Okay. And Hal Needham was really known for a lot of things, but a very close relationship with Burt Reynolds. And that relationship is what Quentin kind of based that relationship on. Rick Dalton and Cliff Booth is based on Hal Needham and Burt Reynolds. So we're going to dive right into Hal Needham here. So along with a guy named Gary Kent, he was one of the primary inspirations for Cliff Booth. He was born March 6, 1931. He died at the age of 82 years old, October 25th, 2013. Renaissance man. This guy did a lot. He was an actor, writer, director, stuntman, of course, war veteran like Cliff Booth, and he was a buddy to Burt Reynolds. And Burt Reynolds, by the way, was supposed to be, he was the original George Spawn. Okay. So George Spawn owned Spawn Movie Ranch. They filmed a lot of things, and that's where the Manson family lived. As he got older, he was blind, and he let the Manson family live on his ranch, and he was sleeping with one of them. He was actually sleeping with Lynette Frome. And she became known as Squeaky.
Yeah,
And their story is that he named her Squeaky because that's the noise she made when they were having sex. So she was Squeaky. Her name was Lynette.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's where she got the name. So Burt Reynolds was going to play George Spawn, but he passed away. So he was even at the table reading. I mean, he was a big part of the movie. He passed away before his scene, so that's when it went
No idea. Because the guy that did play George Spawn is in a lot of Tarantino films, right?
Bruce Dern? I don't know that he's done any Tarantino films.
He was in
films.
Hateful Eight, I think.
He might have been.
Yeah, I think he was the guy in the chair or something like that.
Could have been.
Who was racist as all get out.
That makes sense. I have to go back and watch that. But Bruce Dern's been around forever. He's Laura Dern's dad.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Cool. So he's been around for, Forever. Yeah. He was on a great show called Big Love. I don't know if you ever watched Big Love on HBO.
No.
And he played a similar character, just cantankerous. And it's I think Bruce Dern's been an angry old man his whole life.
He's always
been that guy. But so Hal Needham, great friends of Burt Reynolds, they were professional partners. We're going to talk a lot about that today. Friends, they lived together for 5 years. They met on the set of a show called Riverboat, which was an old Burt Reynolds show. I'm not a Burt Reynolds guy. Are you a Burt Reynolds guy?
No, I'm not a Burt Reynolds guy. You know, the basic Smokey and the Bandit type stuff and whatnot. You know, but that's about it. I don't know really anything else about the guy except in his later years, he looked kind of sad. And,
yeah.
So
I just don't dig him. I'm a little bit older than you, not much older. In the 80s, I remember that was like, I feel like the 80s was like the height of his like race car stuff. Lonnie Anderson and I just never dug his vibe. And then I've seen some stuff on YouTube. He's just kind of an asshole. Really.
I've heard that too.
Yeah.
I've heard he's kind of, and he kind of comes off that way in the movies too. Yeah. I think like he kind of always plays the smart ass jerk, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah.
He was, from what I understand too, like a recent thing, like later in his career, you know, he was nominated for an Oscar for Boogie Nights. And he was even kind of a prick about that. He didn't want to promote the movie. Didn't like the movie. I'm like, dude, they just handed you like this Oscar caliber role. Like no one else is giving you a role like this. You know what I mean? And I don't know.
That was a great movie.
Oh, it's one of the best. Yeah. That's one of the best.
Yeah, he was good. Now I forgot about that one.
Yeah, Boogie Nights. But I don't think his vibe. But so we're going to talk about Hal Needham. And Burt Reynolds is going to come up a lot today. Most of his work was as a stuntman and a stunt coordinator. I pulled out some from the New York Times obituary about him. It's kind of cool. So in 2012, Quentin Tarantino actually presented Hal Needham with an honorary Academy Award. So this is years before they even made Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. And Mr. Needham said in a speech at the Academy Awards in 2012, he broke 56 bones, including his back twice. He punctured a lung, had a shoulder replaced, and knocked out several teeth. He invented several new stunt methods and devices, among them the introduction of airbags for breaking falls. Which he learned by watching pole vaulters. You know, when pole vaulters go up, they land on the airbag. Sure. So, and he said it was as a way to save myself some trips to the hospital. So, but I thought it was cool.
56 bones?
Oh my gosh. Yeah, he was legit, man. He was legit.
That's wild.
He had a lot of similarities to Cliff Booth, too. So they had the similar look. So Hal Needham was a cool looking guy, wore a lot of the denim, the big belt buckle, the sunglasses. A lot of Brad Pitt's look was based on that. Obviously, he had a close relationship with Burt Reynolds, much like the relationship with Rick Dalton. He was a veteran as well, a war veteran, but no dead wife. So I'm not sure where that came from.
You said a writer and producer as well?
Yeah. We're going to
talk. That's interesting.
Oh, the guy did everything. Yeah. Wow. He was a writer, actor, writer, director. He did
amazing.
A lot. Yeah. We're actually going to talk some of that. So let's take a look at his film credits. We'll just dive right in. So he had 74 acting credits, 20 directing credits, 3 producing credits, 11 writing credits, and 107 stunt credits. Now, the plan was for me to focus on his stunt credits because that's what he's most famous for. That's what Cliff did. So I thought I'd kind of keep it in that. But I did take like a cursory look at his directing credits. And we got to talk about this.
Okay.
We're going to go down. So you mentioned Smokey and the Bandit earlier. That's going to come up. So let's talk about his directing credits. So here are some statistics. I actually did some math on this. So of his 20 directing credits, 8 of them star Burt Reynolds. That's 40% of his directing had Burt Reynolds. And here they are. He directed Smokey and the Bandit. Hooper, Smokey and the Bandit 2, The Cannonball Run, Stroker Ace, Cannonball Run 2. He then did an episode of BL Striker, which was a TV show that Burt Reynolds was in. And then he directed a TV movie called Hard Times Hostage Hotel. So those are his 20 directing credits. So 40% of it involved Burt Reynolds. Now, of the movies that he directed, 30% of them had something to do with Smokey and the Bandit. So he directed Smokey and the Bandit. He directed Smokey and the Bandit 2. And then he did 4 TV movies in 1994. 4 of them in 1 year, all about Smokey and the Bandit. None of them had Burt Reynolds in it, but they're all about Smokey and the Bandit. So this goes deep. There's a lot of Smokey.
Yeah, I'd say so.
And it's not my vibe, but we're going to come back to Smokey and the Bandit. So first, let's take a look at his first directing credit. It's Smokey and the Bandit in 1977. His last is Hard Times Hostage Hotel. It's a TV movie from 1999, which also starred Burt Reynolds. It also featured Danielle Harris in it. So Danielle Harris, she's famous. She was the little girl in Halloween's 4 and 5.
Okay.
I don't know if you're a Halloween guy or not.
Yeah, I've seen them. I'm not that deep into it.
Well, she's famous in that world. Yeah. Like okay. She still does horror shows. But also she was in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Okay.
So she was one of the Manson girls. She's actually the very pregnant one who walks up and I think tells Tex Watson that, hey, there's a guy here.
Okay, sure.
Yeah. So she's really pregnant.
Yeah, a little picture frame on her stomach there. Mm-hmm. It's kind of interesting.
Yep. So that's Danielle Harris. But also this Hard Times hostage hotel also feature an actor named Spencer Garrett, and he was in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. He was Alan Kincaid, the guy at the beginning who was interviewing them. Oh, this is Alan Kincaid. Sure.
And, you're not seeing double.
Exactly. That's him. Yeah. So that guy was in it. Yeah. Hard Times Hostage Hotel also had Janet Dubois. She came up once in a podcast. She played Wilona in Good Times. And it had Ted McGinley. You remember Ted McGinley? You know his face. I should pull him up. He was a guy like in the 80s and 90s. He was always coming to shows like in their last couple of seasons. He entered. He was the new neighbor and Married with Children after, you know.
Okay. Well, then I would definitely recognize him.
Because, Marcy was married to Steve. Then Steve left. Then the new husband, the good-looking guy. Okay. That's Ted McGinley. Okay. He did the same thing with Happy Days. He was like in the last two seasons of Happy Days.
He had his niche then.
Yes. Yeah. He kind of came in late to TV shows that were kind of going downhill. But look, we need to talk about these four movies from 1994. We have to talk about this. So he did these four Smokey and the Bandit TV movies in 1994. I'm going to read their titles to you. So the first one, and I'm not making this up because it sounds like it's made up here. So the first one is called Bandit Goes Country. The second one's called Bandit. That's real. I wish I were making that up. Then it's Bandit, Beauty and the Bandit. And then the last one is called Bandit Silver Angel. So we're going to dive into each one of these real quick. So the first one, let me pull it up in my search here. Sorry about that. So where is Bandit? The first one is called Bandit Goes Country. So here's the synopsis. And I love this synopsis. Of course, my phone's being slow, so I'm pulling it up.
Is Burt in this? Okay.
No. Burt Reynolds is not associated with any of these that I can tell. Maybe, I don't know if there's any kind of producing credit. But here's the synopsis. I mean, this is what kills me. In what appears to be a prequel to the Smokey and the Bandit films. So let's just break that sentence down. So who wrote this? Well, hell, I don't know. I'm guessing it's a prequel. What the hell? So in what appears to be a prequel to the Smokey and the Bandit films, a young bandit returns to his hometown to rekindle things with an old flame. So that's a synopsis. It stars a guy named Brian Bloom as Bandit. His credits include Once Upon a Time in America, which is a Sergio Leone movie. And that's one of, Quentin Tarantino's favorite directors.
James Woods and
De Niro.
De Niro, yeah.
I don't care for that.
I didn't like it at all, yeah.
Yeah. And it's actually confusing. Yeah. I remember watching it, not understanding the end. It was kind of strange. Yeah, but this guy, Brian Bloom, also did an episode of 21 Jump Street, which was one of my favorites as a kid. Loved that show as a kid. And he did tons of video game voiceovers. The movie also features Christopher Atkins from Blue Lagoon. He was a blonde haired, curly dude, curly blonde hair.
Okay.
You ever seen Blue Lagoon?
Yeah, I have. Yeah.
That was big for me.
What's the female lead?
Brooke Shields.
Yeah.
Man.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
That was a big deal as a kid.
That was a young Brooke Shields. Holy cow.
Really young.
Yeah.
Yeah. It may have been like her first acting credit. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, no, it wasn't. She had a really gross acting credit. You know, she, she famously got naked. I've never seen the movie. I'm surprised they even allowed it out. She was like 13 and did a nude scene. And it was a legit movie because it's called Pretty Baby. I don't know what it's about. I think it's about prostitution, but Susan Sarandon's the lead. It was a legit film. This wasn't like some B movie. Yeah. I mean, it was like a real movie. And she played a child prostitute, and apparently she does a nude scene.
Wow. It's probably like even
12 or 13.
How's that allowed?
Right. Like, 12 or 13. Huh. But
that's a little creepy.
A little creepy.
Yeah.
But Blue Lagoon was big for me as a kid. This movie also had Elizabeth Berkley in it. She was in Saved by the Bell and Showgirls. Yeah, and Jesse Spano. Yeah. Charles Nelson Reilly was in it. But it must have been a winner because they decided to make three more of these things, right? So 1994, the first one comes out. So here comes the second one. It's called Bandit: Bandit. That's, So great. Let's pull this one up. Let's read the synopsis here. Let's see. Assigned to deliver a prototype car to a press conference for the governor, things are complicated by a fraudulent bandit who ends up stealing something, something, something. I'm not even going to read the rest of it. It's not even worth it.
It's multiple bandits happening here.
So I think we have two bandits, hence the title, Bandit. Brian Bloom returns, because what else is he going to do, right? he's got nothing else going on. Richard Belzer's in it. He's a stand-up, if you know Richard Belzer.
I know the name, but...
You know what he did? He did a... Law and Order, I think, for a lot of years. Okay. He was a stand-up and then kind of transitioned to acting and he was on that show forever. Amy Dolenz was in it. She's the daughter of Mickey Dolenz from the Monkees.
Okay.
He's the last remaining monkey, actually. And John Schneider was in it from, he was the blonde from Dukes of Hazzard.
Oh, okay, yeah.
I don't know if he's Bo or Luke.
Yeah, whichever one. I wouldn't know. Again, not really my vibe.
But, no. I love the car as a kid. Yeah. That was big for me, the car, but not so much the show.
They just did, Luke and Bo just did like a... a Super Bowl commercial or something and kind of rekindled the Dukes of Hazzard. And I was like, they, you know, but they look pretty good. Like they aged very well. Like they came along.
Yeah. John Schneider's, he never went away. He had like a country career. I think he did some singing. The other guy did theater, Tom Wopat. And he had some legal issues actually. He got in trouble. I think it was sexual stuff, sexual harassment or, I think he was working in a play. He's just like regional theater. Yeah. And I think he wasn't too kind to a female co-star or maybe inappropriate. I don't know. But, but, it's weird, the stuff that sticks in your head.
Stigma on you. It's not good.
Not good. So that's Bandit. Now we're going to move into, like, these things must be raking in money because now they're rolling out a third one.
Do you know what? You said this was on TV. Like, do you know where this was on?
I don't. Like, just TV movies. Yeah. I have no clue. I mean, I'm sure I could look
like
it
Hallmark
up.
Like Hallmark type TV? Or,
well, it's 1994, man. So, I mean, you know, I don't know.
Not a lot of options in 94.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know Hallmark. I mean, there was certainly basic cable. But so this one's Bandit, Beauty and the Bandit. So I'll read that synopsis too. Why not? Since we know the synopsis, let me pull it up here. So, TV version of Smoking the Bandit. This episode co-starred Kathy Ireland as a model running from a man who wants money that she has. She gets a ride from the bandit. They stop at a gas station. Da 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 da, and it goes on forever. I'm not going to read the whole thing. But my man Brian Bloom is back because he's locked in.
Bloom is the bandit. Clearly,
yeah, so. He's this one also had Henry Cho. Do you know Henry Cho? He's still around. Henry Cho is an Asian. He's a stand-up comedian. He's Asian, but his shtick is that he grew up in the South, so he's got a real Southern accent.
Okay.
So that's his whole thing. Yeah. He talks like this, but he's Asian.
No kidding. Okay.
My father-in-law once played golf with him. You're a golfer.
Yeah.
And my father-in-law played golf with him. I think it was like a celebrity thing, and every foursome had a celebrity. This was their celebrity, Henry Cho. Apparently, he's a real pain in the ass to golf with.
Okay.
I think he's a real know-it-all. And
you learn a lot about a person on the golf course.
I would imagine.
Sure.
You learn a lot about me. I curse and throw my clubs. Was that?
I'm a cusser for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. I just didn't ever found it relaxing. That sport drove me crazy. But yeah, Henry Cho, apparently he's a pain in the ass. Tony Curtis was in this one, though, too.
Yeah.
So I mean, that's Jamie Lee Curtis's dad. Like, that's what's going on
there's
there.
There's a couple heavy hitters in that synopsis there. Yeah. Sure. For sure.
And then Kathy Ireland, who she was big in 94. And then finally, sadly, we come to number four, the final of these TV movies. And this was called Bandit, Silver Angel. And I even wrote down the synopsis, too long to read. I'm not even going to bother with it. But this is, I like to call it Brian Bloom's victory lap. This is his fourth and final, you know. This is his goodbye to the fans. But now it's a family affair because his brother's in this one too, Scott Bloom. So Scott Bloom joins him in this one. But wait, funny credits. So when you're looking at the credits, Tracy Lords is in this. She was a porn star and then became, you know, I guess a legit actress. I don't think she ever did anything really great. She's pretty B-level. But I remember she was famous because, I worked in a video store, you know, and it was a mom and pop video store. And mom and pop video stores are awesome. I love them. And I was going to talk about this later. I'll talk about it now. What I love about them, so I never had cable as a kid. Well, not till much later. We didn't have cable. And what I loved about mom and pop video stores, they had a couple of sections that you couldn't get anywhere else. First of all, they had great horror sections.
Yeah.
Like the vile stuff that you work into getting a Blockbuster, right? Then they also had a whole wrestling section, which was huge for me. So as a little kid, I loved like WWF wrestling and all that.
Yeah.
But again, it'd have cable, which means you can't get pay-per-view. So I'd have to like wait 6-7 months after a WrestleMania to then go to the video store and get these things. But they also had an adult section, right? You know, the porno room in the back. And we had the porno room and it had like these Western style swinging saloon doors.
I was hoping you had the bead wall or something.
No, it's like the swinging doors, you know? And I was 14. I got to go in there because it was one of the video stores where you bring the box to the counter. I take the box, I go back, I get the video. So when people return things to put the video back and I have to put the box in. So I got to go in there, but I never forget. We got a call from whomever, and we had to go through and pull all the Tracy Lords movies out because it turns out she was underage.
Oh, wow.
And they found out years later, but, you know, we still had these movies. So I remember being ironic. I'm 14 at the time. I'm going through all the pornos looking for Tracy Lords movies to pull them out because it was illegal to rent them out. So Tracy Lords, but here's what makes me sad about it. She's credited literally next to this guy named Donald O'Connor. And Donald O'Connor, I don't know a lot about him, but he was super talented. The movie that my wife makes me watch a lot, he was in Singing in the Rain.
Okay.
This guy is, he steals the movie. He's an amazing tap dancer. It's all these tricks, you know, and it's sad to me to think in 1994, all these years later, now he's in some movie listed next to Tracy Lords. It's like, But speaking of wrestling, another guy that's in this movie, the fourth and final Smokey movie, Fred Ottman is in it. And he was, did you watch wrestling in the 80s?
Not a ton. No, I'm familiar with the big guys, but not enough.
Gotcha. Wouldn't know this guy. But Fred Ottman was a wrestler and his name was Tugboat Thomas. And I remember that.
Okay.
And later on, he changed his,
it's a great name.
Yeah. And that was his thing. He wore white pants and a tug, and he was like, okay. He was a protege of Hulk Hogan. I remember that.
Nice.
But later on, he became a bad guy and he changed his name to Typhoon. And he was a tag team partner with a guy named Earthquake. And together, they were the Natural Disasters. So
I just thought he the Silver Angel and the Bandit.
I don't even know. I don't know. It's funny. It's like for him, that's probably his best acting credit, right? Then for someone like Donald O'Connor, it's like he's on his way out. It's kind of funny how that stuff works. But those are the four made for TV movies that I never knew existed. But enough of that. Enough Bandit. He also directed a little gem called Rad. Now we're going to talk about Rad.
Oh.
Do you know Rad?
Oh, yeah.
You know it?
Yeah. Now, I'm not going to, you can tell me every actor in it and I'll be like, who? But man, that's one of those movies that like makes an impression on your young mind back in the day.
Yeah. I love it. I don't know it. And I don't even recognize the box, because sometimes, like even when you were talking about Daryl, I've not seen it, unless I have and I forgot, but I know the box. I can place it in my head. There's like a little kid.
Yeah. The Rad box was rad. Like it was all 80s.
Well, the poster looks kind of cool.
Yeah,
right?
Like neon and sure. Yeah, kind of cool.
So Hal Needham directed this, right? Is that, directed by Hal Needham. Yeah, he directed it. And so it caught my eye. It's a 1986 movie starring Lori Loughlin. She was Full House.
Yeah.
And she's also famous
for trouble now.
Yeah, famous for buying her way to USC. But I'll read the synopsis. I mean, you already know it, but the story of one young man, Crew Jones, who has the intensity and desire to win a BMX race called Hell Track.
Nice. That's not the most 80s synopsis ever.
No, it's very 80s. And the box looks 80s. And but here's what was interesting to me. So Talia Shire is in this. She was in Rocky. So I'm sure you know Talia Shire. She was Adrian. Everyone knows her, right?
Yeah.
And it got me thinking, because I never understood her career. Like, I was like, what happened to Talia Shire? Because look, I mean, is she either a legend or is she a B-movie actress? I don't know. Because she has, like, she did Godfather and Godfather 2 and 3. Of course, her brother is Francis Ford Coppola. So that has something to do with it.
Yeah.
And then she also did the Rocky movies. But there's stuff like this. And I'm like, in 1986, like, Talia Shire was still a big deal. So I thought I would do a little deep dive on her. Because I'm trying to decide, is she a legend? Is she not a legend? So a couple of her early credits, right? Because she's building her acting career. She got some pretty bad ones. So she's got this one called, it's from 1970. It's called Gas. Or It Became Necessary to Destroy the World in Order to Save It. That's a real title of the movie.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
One of those dual title things. Yeah. And I was like, I'll bite. All right, I want to see what that's about. So it's directed by Roger Corman. He's famous. You can look him up. Roger Corman's famous. He's like a very famous, maybe the most famous B-movie director.
Okay.
Like, he's known for that. And it's actually funny, although his movies are pretty much known for being shitty and a lot of nudity and that, but he launched a lot of careers. Like, a lot of people went on to have big things, kind of got their start with him. So he was real helpful.
Perfect example right here.
Exactly, Here's the synopsis. I thought we'd read it. A gas is let loose upon the world that kills anyone over 25 years old. Right. It also featured Ben Vereen. Ben Vereen was a famous actor, tap dancer.
It's one of my favorite Robert Langdon novels. If you know Robert Langdon, the guy who does Angels and Demons and all that.
Oh, sure,
you know that
sure,
character?
Sure.
Uh-huh. The last one I read, it was they're releasing a liquid that makes 50% of the world infertile or something like that. But that sounds like some kind of similar plot where they're trying to rid the world of overpopulation or something, you know?
Yeah, could be. So. And I like the title. It's like one of those two title movies. It's called Gas, or It Became Necessary to Destroy the World in Order to Save It. And can't wait to not watch that movie. But again, Ben Vereen was in it. Cindy Williams was also in it too. Cindy Williams was in Laverne and Shirley.
Okay.
She was Shirley, because Laverne was Penny Marshall. Almost succeeded. All right, so after that, so that's 1970. So 1971, and again, I had no intention of actually looking into these, but it's like, I'll bite. This one's called, it's 1971, it's called The Christian Licorice Store. So I'm like, okay, I'll look into that. So let's read this one. The Christian Licorice Store. A tennis champion, I had no idea this would be about tennis, right? A tennis champion falls in with the Hollywood crowd. He soon finds himself being corrupted by the life on the fast lane. So it's called The Christian Licorice
Store. I feel like that could have been huge, except for the title. You know, that's going to turn people off.
I'm with you. It's got to have. It's 1971. Yeah, who knows what's going on? The star of the movie is Beau Bridges. That's Jeff Bridges' brother. Yeah. And I met Beau Bridges once in L.A. Wasn't the friendliest guy in town, yeah. I will say. Yeah. But again, another movie that I can't wait to not watch. But then this leads like to the next year, right? So now she goes on this run because that's 71. 72, between 72 and 79, she has Godfather, Godfather 2, Rocky, Rocky 2. So you got a couple of Best Picture, mm-hmm. either winner or nominees, right? These, it's a big run. Then there's a lull, but even between 82 and 85, she has Rocky 3 and 4. And again, those aren't critically acclaimed, but they're monster movies. Sure. I mean, I have to imagine Rocky 3 and Rocky 4 are like some of the biggest movies of their years, right? And then she's gone. Like, and then, or she's not gone because now she's doing Rad. Right? So, but like, that's 84. And then in 86, she's doing Rad. I just don't get it. It's either she's a horrible actress and she's just lucky she's got a relationship with her brother and Sly Stallone, or I don't know.
Yeah.
I never got her career though.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
I almost thought you were going to say she was in The Shining, but that's not, obviously not the same actress.
No, that's, oh.
They're similar looking. I actually thought she was in The Shining. But,
sure.
But yeah.
Yeah, I know. Oh, man. The lady who played Wendy in The Shining. Yeah. What was her damn name? She played Olive Oil.
Yeah.
But something caught my eye. It's going to take me a second. I got to pull it up. And it's not readily available. So let me just give me 1 second here. But Talia Shire did an episode of Blossom.
Okay.
And that in and of itself is not terribly interesting. But something in it was really interesting. Well, let me find it. It's an episode from 1995. I'm struggling to find it. Let me find it here. It's called A Star is Bared. It aired March 13th, 1995. Here's why it jumped at me. Not because of Blossom, but because she played herself in this episode of Blossom. Wow. And I'm like, in what scenario is Talia Shire playing Talia Shire in an episode of Blossom? You got to hear this scenario. This alone is worth the price of admission. Right, so here's the scenario. Of Blossom, 1985. A chance encounter with Talia Shire gets Blossom a prominent role in a film. However, she is conflicted when she realizes that it requires nudity.
Like, oh, wow. That's okay. Didn't see it going that direction.
So Talia Shire's an episode of Blossom trying to get Blossom naked? I don't know. That that was worth talking about, I thought. So, okay. Back to Hal Needham, because at one point this was about Hal Needham. Let's talk about his stunt career. So 107 stunt credits, or stunt coordinator, I should say. The first one was a movie called The Spirit of St. Louis, which we'll talk about. That was 1957. His last stunt credit, last feature-length stunt credit anyway, is from a movie called The Sun Chaser in 1996 with Woody Harrelson. I've not seen it. Doesn't look terribly good. It's kind of forgettable. But let's talk about The Spirit of St. Louis, because this was an interesting movie. It was a mess. This was a Jimmy Stewart movie. And I love Jimmy Stewart. I think everyone liked Jimmy Stewart's like the Tom Hanks of his time, right? I mean, probably most famous for, Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, It's a Wonderful Life, all that. And you don't hear a bad thing about him except on this film set. So apparently there was a lot of angst. So a lot of people, including him, felt he was miscast. He was too old. So in the movie, it's a true story. He plays Charles Lindbergh.
Yeah.
And The Spirit of St. Louis is the plane, right? Charles Lindbergh thought it was bad casting. Jimmy Stewart thought it was bad casting. And it led to some poor behavior on set. And just everyone was unhappy. Hmm. So it's one of the only times you'll hear negative stuff about Jimmy Stewart. But that was the first stunt credit for Hal Needham. Other notable stunt credits for him. 1962 is The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance. Another Jimmy Stewart movie. So I also had Lee Marvin. You know Lee Marvin? I just watched Lee Marvin. He's a tough guy. And Tarantino actually references Lee Marvin quite a bit. So he must be a big Lee Marvin fan.
I guess so, yeah.
He comes up in Reservoir Dogs, actually. Two of the guys are fighting. It's I think it's when Harvey Keitel. Have you seen Reservoir Dogs?
Oh, yeah.
When Harvey Keitel's character is getting into it with Michael Madsen's character, and they decide to calm down, and I think it's Michael Madsen goes, "You must be a big Lee Marvin fan." No? And I just watched The Dirty Dozen, and Lee Marvin's the lead in The Dirty Dozen. And anyway,
okay, there you go, that helps.
Yeah, deep
put
voice.
A face to it. Yeah,
deep
okay.
voice. Looks like a dude. Even then, he's an old guy. You still want to mess with him.
He just looks like a badass.
Oh, yeah. Totally. But Jimmy Stewart's in this as is Lee Marvin, John Wayne, John Carradine, who's David Carradine's dad. David Carradine worked with Quentin Tarantino in the Kill Bill movies. Lee Van Cleef is in this. He was in The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly.
Okay.
And well, he was actually in, I think, that trilogy, a Fistful of Dollars for a Few Dollars More, and then The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. And in The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, he was the bad, if you will.
Okay.
So The Good is Clint Eastwood, the Ugly is Tuco, played by Eli Wallach. But interesting story about Lee Van Cleef. So Lee Van Cleef was like a staple in these movies. He did a lot of the spaghetti westerns. But when I read this, I wasn't planning on talking about this today, but you might dig it. So when Quentin Tarantino was looking for film locations for Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, he was looking at different homes, trying to find Rick Dalton's home, I think. And he found a home that turns out it was owned by Lee Van Cleef when Lee Van Cleef was alive. And in the home, in the garage, Lee Van Cleef's garage, I think the wife still owned the home or someone in the family owned the home. But there was this monster, like billboard size poster of Lee Van Cleef's face.
Okay.
And that's what gave him the idea to put Rick Dalton's
drive up,
in the driveway. Yeah. But that came from Lee Van Cleef's house.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So that's Lee Van Cleef.
Yeah.
Other notable credits. He did 1962's How the West Was Won, another Jimmy Stewart movie, another John Wayne movie. So this guy worked with Jimmy Stewart and John Wayne a lot. This movie also had Gregory Peck, Henry Fonda, George Peppard, we talked about. Mm-hmm. Debbie Reynolds, ironically, she was a lead in Singing in the Rain, which we talked about earlier. And Eli Wallach, who was in The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, one of my favorites. He did Donovan's Reef in 1963, John Wayne. McClintock in 1963, John Wayne. So also an honorable mention for best poster. If you ever look up McClintock, really cool poster. Okay. You know, also was in McClintock was, I can't remember her name. She played Lily Munster, though. Yvonne DiCarlo was in it. She was Lily Munster in The Munsters.
Okay.
Yeah. Cool. So other things. So he did Our Man Flint. He did Rawhide. He did Star Trek, the TV show. He did Custer. Now we're going to have to talk about Custer. So Custer is a TV show I'd never heard of. I came across it and I'm like, certainly it's not about General Custer, right? It is.
Wow.
Okay. So I was like, well,
70s or 60s?
I got to look it up. I have it written down. Let me pull up. My phone's being a little bit slow. So let's pull up Custer here.
Hopefully, got to be a John Wayne or someone in there, or Jimmy Stewart.
it's a TV show.
You seem to be tied to those two for a lot.
So it's a TV show from 1967, and my phone is not pulling it up. Okay, quick break there. So Custer, I had to look it up because I'm like, that can't be about General Custer. It is. So this is a TV show from, let me see here, 1967. It ran 17 episodes. Here's a synopsis, and it made me laugh. So in 1868, after the Civil War, Custer takes charge of a mix of ex-Confederates and criminals, the 7th Cavalry Regiment of Fort Hays, Kansas. His boss, General Terry, doesn't like his methods or his long blonde hair, but he manages to keep fighting the Sioux. And then in parentheses, the series ends the year before Little Bighorn. I would hope so.
pretty doomed series there. Not a lot of character building after that.
Good thing Little Bighorn didn't come up in season one.
Yeah, right. That would have
Anyway, so other credits that are fun. He was stunts in CC and Company. That's the Joe Namath movie that she's watching.
Yeah.
She sees the commercial for their
bare knuckle fighting.
So she sees that commercial for that. Little Big Man, great Dustin Hoffman movie. One More Train to Rob, which is a George Peppard film that I referenced in the first episode of Fanacek. And then he did The French Connection. I mean, we could do this all day.
Yeah.
Blazing Saddles, Chinatown, directed by Roman Polanski. The Longest Yard, A Star Is Born, Foul Play. I mean,
big time, man.
Yeah, this guy did a lot.
Yeah. So do you think he did that mostly as a coordinator?
Either stunts or stunt coordinator. Okay. Yeah. I mean, it's usually teams.
Do you think that's the path to directing is stunt coordinating and that's how you become like a director?
He did a lot of stuff too. So it looks, obviously he acted. So I think all of it. My guess, honestly, is the relationship with Burt Reynolds is probably what led to a lot of that. You know, when you're best buddies, because you got to remember at one point, Burt Reynolds was arguably the biggest star in Hollywood. Mm-hmm. I mean, really. John Wayne kind of had it, and then he went off. And I'd say Clint Eastwood and Burt Reynolds, man, in the 70s were probably the two biggest box office stars, you know?
That's a good guy to be tied to. Yeah.
Yeah. It would be like if you were great friends with, I don't know, DiCaprio today. I mean, you're going to be able to do whatever you want. I mean, he's a big box office draw. So I want to talk about best posters. I think we got a three-way tie here. So we got a movie called Shenandoah, a movie called The Animals, and a movie called Hell's Angels on Wheels. So I'm going to pull them up. Well, we're going to talk about... Let's start with Shenandoah. So Shenandoah is 1965. I'll read the synopsis. During the Civil War, a Virginia farmer and his family vow to remain neutral, but one of the sons is captured by Union soldiers, sending the farmer to his rescue. The star of this movie? Jimmy Stewart. Jimmy Stewart. So let's take a look here. So read the synopsis. It also starred Glenn Corbett. Glenn Corbett was he replaced George Maharis in the show Route 66.
Okay.
So George Maharis was the subject of my second podcast episode. That's how I know Glenn Corbett. And this was the film debut of Catherine Ross.
Wow.
So Catherine Ross, and we're going to talk about her too, because she reminds me a little bit of Talia Shire. Catherine Ross was beautiful. And she has this run, like this Murder's Row movies. And then you don't hear about her again. I'm like, what the hell happened? So let's talk about her. So she was born January 29th, 1940. She's got 66 acting credits. The first one is a TV show called Omnibus, which a lot of people start off on Omnibus. That comes up a lot. The episode that she was in also featured Margaret Hamilton. And Margaret Hamilton was, You know, she was the Wicked Witch in Wizard of Oz.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And then when I was a kid, she did coffee commercials. I don't know if you remember that. Are you old enough for that? So it was either Maxwell House or Folgers. It was one of them, but she was obviously a much older woman. But I remember being in a place, I was like, I know her. So I was blown mind as a kid that the Wicked Witch is now hawking coffee and commercials. But let's talk about her last credit. It was a movie called Attachments in 2019. Not much really to talk about, but it was written by Joe Bologna. Joe Bologna is a famous actor. He's been around forever. And it caught my eye that he wrote this movie. You might remember him. He was Adam Sandler's dad in Big Daddy.
Oh, sure then.
The guy's he's been in 100 things. Yeah. But it's something that I got reminded of when I saw this. He was also the star of a TV show called Top of the Heap. I don't know if you remember Top of the Heap. It was 1991. It ran 7 episodes. It was a spinoff of Married with Children.
Oh, wow.
Which we talked about earlier. Yeah, it was a spinoff of that. It starred him and Matt LeBlanc. So before Matt LeBlanc got Friends. Okay. And I'll never forget, it was one of those things where, and they did this a lot back in the day, where the pilot episode of Top Leap was actually an episode of Married with Children.
Okay.
I think Al knows that dad, Joe, played by Joe Bologna. Yeah, and then they kind of go into their life. And I think on the success of that, okay, then we'll go ahead and do the show. It also had Joey Lauren Adams in it. Joey Lauren Adams was a staple in the 90s.
Yeah.
She, my wife met her. Okay. I have a photo with her. Met her here. I guess she was filming in Nashville. And night my wife is out and texts me a photo of her and Joey Lauren Adams. I'm like, wow, that's pretty cool. But other notable roles for Catherine Ross. She did The Virginian with Clue Gulager. He's a subject of a future podcast episode of mine. She did a movie called The Singing Nun. And I was like, okay, I'll bite. What's The Singing Nun? So let me pull it up here on my phone. I had never heard of it. The Singing Nun is a movie from 1966, and it's basically on a true story. It's the fanciful biography of the Belgian nun who briefly made the hit parade. Wow. I was like, what? Debbie Reynolds. She comes up again. That's the wild. Star of Singing in the Rain. Yeah. Also, Ricardo Montalban was in this, as was Ed Sullivan. And my wife's grandfather was one of the producers of the Ed Sullivan Show.
Yeah, I was fascinated by that when I heard that last episode. That's really, really cool.
Yeah, well, you know, here in this office that we're sitting in, that big picture of the Beatles up there with Ed Sullivan actually came from them. That's not like a post that I bought. It was an actual photograph that they had blown up.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's pretty wild.
The stories he must have had. I mean, just unreal.
Pretty cool stuff. Yeah. But Ricardo Montalban is in this. He was the lead in Fantasy Island. You know Ricardo Montalban? He's Mexican, and he's famous. Welcome to Fantasy Island.
You know? Okay.
And he had that famous Mexican accent, and he did these car commercials in the 70s. I want to say they were Lincolns, but don't quote me. And he was like, fine, Corinthian leather. And that became like his thing. Well, recently I was watching an episode of Hawaii Five-O from like season one. So it's like 1968. Ricardo Montalban is playing a Japanese mafia guy.
Oh my gosh.
And he's even got like prosthetics to make his eyes look Asian. I'm like, how do they get away with this?
Right.
But like, it's awful in a lot of ways, but why take a guy who's famous for being Mexican?
Right.
Can't find a white guy to do this too?
How'd he do? I mean, like.
But also, they filmed in Hawaii. A huge Asian population in Hawaii. I can't imagine you could find a Japanese American actor.
Absolutely.
But yes, Ricardo Montalban played a Japanese Yakuza guy, and I was like blown away. And I'm looking, I'm like, he looks so familiar to me. And I was like, holy shit, that's Ricardo Montalban. Yeah. Huh. But now she starts, so now we're talking about Catherine Ross, right? So now she starts this all star run. 1967, she does The Graduate. She plays Dustin Hoffman's love interest. Okay. He's sleeping with her and the mom.
Okay.
69, she has Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid.
Yeah.
You know, and she's one of three leads. I mean, she's Sundance's girlfriend, but she has this close relationship with Butch Cassidy as well. 75, she does the Stepford Wives, and then just comes the decline. Just nothing. I'm like, what happened to her? So I found an interesting credit there. So I'm looking into her career. 1976, she does something that blows my mind. This actually takes me on a bit of a run here. It's a TV movie called Wanted, The Sundance Woman. I'm like, what? The Sundance Kid widow at a place joins up with Pancho Villa. They did a sequel to Butch Cassidy in the four
of
TV. I had no idea.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And Katherine Hellman is in it. Katherine Hellman was, she was in a TV show called Soap, but she's most famous. She played Mona in Who's the Boss?
Okay.
Remember Mona, the red hair? She's all horny all the time. Hector Elizondo was in it. So I'm blown away. I'm like, oh my God, they did a sequel to Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid as a TV movie. But wait. Because then something else catches my eye. Another sequel had already been made 2 years prior. So, and this had nothing to do with Catherine with Catherine Ross. It's from 1974, so 2 years prior to this, called Miss Sundance. I'm going to read the synopsis. The girlfriend of the Sundance Kid is on the run with a price on her head when she hears rumors that the Sundance Kid may still be alive. I'm like, they made two sequels?
Wow.
This one starred Elizabeth Montgomery. Hmm. So she was Samantha Stevens in Bewitched.
Okay.
Yeah, leading Bewitched. Blonde,
yeah.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Great actress. She actually met her future husband on the set of this movie.
I wonder how Catherine got left out of the first sequel. I mean, what the heck? Like, yeah, she'd be all over that. You're right. Obviously, right?
It's so weird. Yeah, so they made this sequel in 74. It has nothing to do with Catherine Ross. Then in 76, they make another one with Catherine Ross. Hmm. They don't seem to be related to each other. It's really weird. And But she met her future husband on the set of this. Elizabeth Montgomery did. And she passed of cancer in 1995 at 62 years old. But that's our first poster. That's Shenandoah. So we went on a run there. Let's start with the second poster. It's from a movie called The Animals in 1970. This is going to take us on a weird run. May or may not get uncomfortable in here. I'm going to harken back to my video store days.
Okay.
But here's The Animals. So I'll show you the poster first. Killer poster.
Oh, that is a killer poster.
I like that poster.
Yeah.
I like that.
They took what they wanted.
Oh, yeah. I didn't even read that. They took what they wanted. Anywhere, anyway, anytime.
Nice.
The Animals. They couldn't be caged. They had to be destroyed.
Big time.
Let me read the synopsis here. A woman tracks down the five men who raped her, helped by an Apache. Right. So I was like, whoa.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
What a great story.
But here's why it sent me on a spiral, because it sounds so similar to a movie that I watched. Have you ever seen or heard of the movie I Spit on Your Grave?
No.
Mm-mm. All right. Well, you're better off.
But I love that saying. I spit on your grave.
You're better off for it. So first I'll read the synopsis. So it's from 1978. And here's a synopsis. An aspiring writer is repeatedly gang raped, humiliated, and left for dead by four men she systematically hunts down to seek revenge. It's brutal. So here's why I know the movie. So first I want to show you the box. Because this was, I guess it's a poster, but I think of it as the box.
Yeah.
That's a memorable one. So I'm 14 years old. And I'm working in this video store. So obviously that catches your eye. But I also imagine it with things like banned in 9 countries. So it was banned in England, banned here, banned there.
Wow.
So to 14-year-old me, I'm like, how horrific must this movie be that it's banned? So I watched it. It's brutal.
Really?
Yeah. I was actually talking to my wife about it the other night. So basically the movie is she's a writer, obviously attractive woman. It's kind of like Deliverance. She goes to some small town. Okay. And she's like getting gas or something. And immediately these four stereotypical hillbillies, they clock her, they're watching her, they eventually hunt her down. She's like canoeing in a bathing suit, and it's pretty brutal. They rape her, and the last guy to do it is a guy who's mentally retarded, and they hold him down, they hold her down while he rapes her. It's horrific. I'm 14 years old.
Seen her film. Can you imagine?
It's awful. It's awful. I know. And then she does, she hunts him down and kills him. But there's this one scene that stayed in my little 14 year old brain forever. So what the way she gets each one of them is basically kind of like seduces them, right? So she seduces them one by one, and then and when they let their guard down, she kills them. Now there's this one guy, he's in a bathtub, and you don't see he's in the bathtub. She's sitting next to the bathtub, kind of sponging him down, right? And then her hands go down under the water, so presumably in his growing area, and then she pulls her hand out, she grabs a knife, and she slides it under the water, right? And you know he's enjoying himself, and all of a sudden he's like, oh, that pinched. You know, and then all this blood just starts bubbling up. And then he realized what happened. She castrated him.
Wow.
Now, here's what's vile. They don't show, and there's no, it's not gruesome. It's not, but that scared the crap out of me. It's like, yeah, anyway. And like I said, it might get uncomfortable in here. But
yeah.
So I spent a game in 1978, the VHS box blew me because it was banned in all these countries. And then I noticed something. They made a sequel. I actually knew this because I'd heard about it. They made a sequel, or a remake rather, in 2010. So they remade it in 2010. It didn't do anything. But then that remake spawned all these multiple sequels. So in 2010, they had I Spit on Your Grave. 2013, they had I Spit on Your Grave 2. 2015, they had... Oh, I spent more sequels. Because 2015 was I Spit on Your Grave, Vengeance is Mine. And then 2019, I Spit on Your Grave, Deja Vu.
Wow.
So they brought this thing back.
I wonder if they all had a castration or not.
I don't know. I don't know. But again, you know, working in a video store was great for several things. Great for horror movies, great for wrestling, great for adult film. But I remember that movie. And again, what drew me to that film was banned in all these countries. That may not have even been true. But anyway, I think there's always room for, like, you know, rape revenge fantasy films.
Yeah, so, I guess so, right?
Glad we talked about that. Anyway, let's go back to the original 1978. So the 1978 I Spit on Your Grave starred a lady named Camille Keaton. She was related to Buster Keaton,
okay,
which I thought was kind of neat. She was married to the director at the time. His name was Meyer Zarkey, I'm not sure. Doesn't really matter. Her credits are mostly horror schlock, so in the same vein as I Spit on Your Grave. But she had an interesting credit. 1972, a film called What Have You... What Have You Done with Solange? And the reason that jumped out at me is that's Beyoncé's sister's name,
yeah,
Solange.
Right.
It's like, I guess that's her name. 2005, a remake of Plan, it's called Plan 9. It was a remake of Ed Wood's Plan 9 from Outer Space.
Okay.
Are you familiar with Ed Wood?
No.
Okay. No. Great movie. Ever get a chance? He's a real director. He's known as being the worst director of all time. But Tim Burton made a great movie called Ed Wood in 1994, I think it was. Starred Johnny Depp as Ed Wood.
Now, I recognize.
Okay, yeah. It was great. Yeah. Martin Landau won an Oscar for it. He played Bela Lugosi, and he won the Academy Award. He beat Sam Jackson in Pulp Fiction.
Wow.
That Academy Award. Yeah, it was a big deal. But anyway, so that's Ed Wood. But so they did a remake of one of his more famous movies called Plan 9 from Outer Space. Some trivia, this lady, Camille here, she is the stepmother of Lorna Luft. And the reason that jumped out at me is Lorna Luft is one of Judy Garland's daughters. Okay. So Judy Garland had, she was married to a guy named Minnelli. And so she had a daughter named Liza Minnelli. And then she was married to a guy named Luft and had Lorna Luft. And then I guess when they got divorced, Lorna Luft's dad married this lady Camille. And now she is the, stepmother.
Yeah,
I'm confused now. Anyway, but so it's like, oh, I know the name Luft. So there you go. So a little bit of Judy Garland. Now, the third and final poster, it's called Hell's Angels on Wheels. Let's pull this sucker up. I love this poster. I'll show it to you here. It's a little different, but it's kind of cool. I dig this.
That is cool.
Yeah, it looked cool in a bar. So it's from 1967. I'll read the synopsis here. Pull it up. At first, gas station attendant Poet is happy when the Hell's Angels gang finally accepts him, but he's shocked when he learns just how brutal they are. So Hell's Angels on Wheels. It starred Jack Nicholson.
Oh, wow.
Early Nicholson.
No kidding, yeah.
And the stunt coordinator on that film was a guy named Gary Kent, who is a subject of my next podcast, and that concludes Hal Needham.
Cool.
How's your time on awesome. Fanacheck?
I loved it. Very cool, man. Yeah, super cool. Like, so many strings connect so many different things, and it's just wild how it all ties together kind of in there. Yeah, so
let's talk about it. So I'll just like to recap with it. What did we learn? So I learned that neither one of us really loved Burt Reynolds. If you ever get a chance, I'm going to take a quick pause here. If you ever get a chance, there's a YouTube video. Burt Reynolds was on, I want to say Jay Leno. Maybe it's Letterman. I think it was Jay Leno. And he's on there with a guy named Mark Summers. Mark Summers was he hosted TV game shows.
Yeah,
like,
of course.
Nickelodeon. Mark,
yeah.
You know the name?
The black guy or whatever.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
And he's such a prick to Mark. And Mark Summers is a pretty unassuming guy. But Burt Reynolds is such a prick to him and keeps interrupting him. And it culminates in them almost getting to a fist fight. And like they pour water on each other. I think Burt Reynolds pours water.
I have seen this actually. Yeah.
And then
I think
Leno tries to make, have some, like turn around because at the end they do like a pie in the
I
face.
I always thought it was hey, let's cause some drama and make it entertaining. But
maybe I don't know. Maybe, I hope you're right because otherwise Burt Reynolds is a dick. I mean, like,
well, we can believe that too.
Yeah. So. I just, that always stood out to me. And that to me is who he was. I just didn't care for him. But so what did we learn? I don't like Burt Reynolds. Hal Needham was a Renaissance man. There are way too many Smokey movies. I mean, we learned that. Talia Shire is a fucking mystery who almost got Blossom to strip down. So that would have redeemed her. I have no intention on streaming the Christian Liquor Store. I'm not going to watch that.
I'll join you.
Hal Needham did tons of work with Jimmy Stewart and John Wayne. Catherine Ross should do way more. She should be way more famous. By the way, you know what? She's married to Sam Elliott.
Okay. Yeah. Amazing. Cool.
Yeah. And I don't know if they met. I got to look this up. But I just rewatched Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. And this was yesterday. And at the end of it, I happened to notice the credits because I don't usually pay attention to credits. And it said Sam Elliott. I guess he was early in the movie. He was one of the car players. I didn't notice him. But I wonder if they met on that set because she is, in fact, married to Sam Elliott. But she should be way more famous. There are two Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid sequels. There's a surprisingly strong market for rape revenge fantasy movies. And it all leads to my man, Gary Kent, who we talk about in the next episode of Fanacheck.
Awesome.
I really appreciate you being here.
Thank you so much for having me. I really enjoyed it.
Of course,
it was
man.
A lot of fun. Yep.
Cool. Well, until next time, Fanacheck! That concludes episode 4 of Fanacheck. I'd like to thank my guest, Turtle. He was awesome. Hope I didn't freak him out with all the rape revenge stuff that came up. Also, if you want to check me out on Twitter, hit me up at Fanacheck Podcast, or you can email me, fanacheckpodcast@gmail.com. Let me know suggestions, tips, things you like, things you don't like. Also, if you want to be a guest, let me know. But until then, stay tuned for another exciting episode of Fanacheck.